Good evening on this New Year's Day. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network as we kick off some of our live programming, something that we're going to try to do more for our listeners and our donor base, is try to bring you some live programming, even if it's just updating you on the day's news. Normally on a weekday, on a Monday, and the first just happens to fall on this Monday, we usually would be listening to Tando Radio Show, and then that was followed up by Melanated Roots, but those people are on vacation and taking care of some other things, and so you are stuck for the next couple of hours with yours truly, Scotty Reed, on the mic from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. And so next 3 hours, we will be talking about what's been happening, and a lot's been happening. Stuff is always happening every day, so it's always something to talk about, something to give a field report about. So the phone lines are open. Let me give out those numbers. Whatever you want to talk about. Definitely there are some things on my mind. We got the beef between Tariq Nasheed and Mr. Umar Johnson. Lots of drama going on there. Lots of topics that we can take instead of trying to explain it, which we should explain it. Not, you know, if anybody wants to explain this behavior in the so-called conscious community. And as I posted earlier today, when people aren't even conscious of their hypocrisy, when these two individuals have made fun of, poked at, attacked, undermined, or whatever adversarial position or word you want to use to describe some of the things that they've said about members of the black community, whether we're talking about religious factions, whether we're talking about LGBT community, whether we're talking about Christians, Muslims, whatever, voters, activists, how someone is. Both of these individuals have attacked people, and it's just hypocrisy for some people out there now, and people are picking camps. It's always been like that, camps. Like Dave Attando Radio Show says, we got to get away from being fans of this and fans of that, because fan is fanatic. And I understand the psychology of symbology and why people tend to put their hopes and aspirations on a single person. And these people, we call them leaders, and they don't demonstrate leadership qualities. And I'm going to talk about that from the perspective of someone who's actually been in the military, has been through some leadership training. Although I have never been through officer training, I have been through NCO training. That's non-commissioned officer training. Held leadership positions during my brief stint in the U.S. military. So if you want to hold up a model standard of leadership, and I'm going to quote Neely Fuller here, you know, these people are dominating, I'm going to paraphrase him, these people are dominating the planet through their military. It's always been that way. And they are organized a certain type of way. You don't have one leader in the U.S. Army, and that's just one out of four factions of the U.S. military. You can then throw in the CIA as well. But you don't have just one leader. As some have said, the president of the United States, that changes, you know, that's just a figurehead. That army, that military has to be able to move regardless of the figurehead, because heads can be chopped off. And so will a military, the machine still be able to function? So I think we should go to the military and let's just identify some of what they call leadership qualities. But again, we got two hours, depending. You can send in your music requests. We'll be kicking some requests. I was just over talking Hakeem Green's Secrets featuring Getta. But definitely we're going to be spinning some tracks. Anything you want to hear from, y'all can hit us up at 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025. Or give us a call at 704-802-5056. That is 704-802-5056. Happy New Year's to everyone out there who celebrated, and even to those who don't, because sometimes it's not a matter about blowing up somebody's celebration with some "do you know the roots of" and the truth about, you know, let people have their trivial traditions and what have you. Not to trivialize anybody's tradition that they practice, but hey, we're never going to get anyone on the same page of that. And does it really, really matter? Because me knowing the roots of New Year's, the roots of Christmas, the roots of Easter, any of these hot Thanksgiving, at the end of the day, that's not going to free a single person who's trapped in modern day slavery. It's not going to lift that knowledge. It's not going to lift anybody out of poverty. It's not going to heal the sick. It's just not. And it's no reason to rain on people's parades, as they say, and be bashing them over the head with this, what I'm gonna just call it as it is. That's my 2018 resolution, if I'm gonna have one. Well, I already made one. My New Year's resolution was to call every single, cause it's the election year. As me and my cousin was talking earlier today and talking about the balance of power and what have you. But this is 2018. This is the election year. This is a very important year. And my pledge is to call every state representative and every federal candidate seeking office in the district that I live in. Again, everybody do their small part. So I'm just focusing on the ones, regardless of their political affiliation, regardless of their political party, I'm going to call them and demand an end to modern day slavery and human trafficking that is being practiced through the slaveries prisons as prescribed by the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Now, in the case of North Carolina with the state representatives, and this is all about reading your constitution, your state constitution. Again, it doesn't matter where those constitutions come from and this and that about agreements and how is that going to help us today? As we were also talking about, my cousin asked me, am I aware that if Virginia had won a certain state office, and they also, I think it, Republicans were denied office on the federal level in Virginia as well. And then he named another state, Alabama. They would have had all the states that they needed to have this Constitution Convention or Conventions of States, as it might be called. There is a constitutional provision, an amendment that says that if you get a required number of states together that agree to have a constitutional convention to rewrite the Constitution, that it can be done. And where is black people at on that? Do they even have a seat at the table? And I saw a quote today. Somebody was like, and this is not to criticize anybody, but it's these sayings. We have to think more critically. They was like, instead of asking for a seat at the table, build your own table. All right. Now, I know there's some people out there who believe in nation building, and we can break that down to micro levels of nation building. That's all a community is. A community is already a nation. We already have a nation. Don't need to build one. We need to organize it. Even if you look up the word nation, there are subcultures within a quote unquote nation that where we live behind these enemy lines calls itself the USA, which is really a corporation in league with other corporations to practice slavery, to extract profit from everything, from everyone. So it's a very important year. It's election year. They're close to having a convention of states. And if they rewrite the Constitution, you can say you don't recognize their authority all you want to. If their law enforcement and the military buy into it, Then guess what they got behind it? The Force of Arms. Now I'm coming back full circle. I'm talking about what is leadership. Well, what? How does the U.S. military judge leadership? Because they dominating the planet. It must be something to it. It can't just be because they are white people, because it is very diverse. And they've never won a war in their history without the aid of black people and other non-white people, but primarily black people. Not the Revolutionary War, not the War 1812, not the Civil War, not any of these conflicts, these major conflicts, these major battles, had they been able to win without a black presence in the United States military. That's history that they don't tell, because that's counter to practicing white supremacy, which of course is to further slavery. So let's talk about, the phone lines are open, but we're going to kick some music, taking your requests. You can hit us up at Twitter at Black Talk Radio. That's at Twitter at Black Talk Radio. We also got a conference line that has a chat room, and that chat room is located at uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. That's uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. Just leave your song request for us and we might be able to get it on the air. We just had to follow certain rules to where we don't play the same artists all in like three in a row or something like that. So anything y'all want to hear, hey, if I can pull it up on YouTube, hit me up with the video or at Black Talk Radio on at Twitter.com. All right. So we'll be back on the other side. Live. Let me shut that down. We're doing three in a row. There's going to be some changes to some of the format, at least the programming that I'm doing for 2018. It's time to reevaluate and change up. That's what the new year really is all about, is people, the majority of people, just use it as a time of reflection. What could we have done better? It all, you know, it's about studying history. That's short-term history, so to speak. It's about studying history. But, you know, I was watching a couple of documentaries. And again, we're taking your song requests and any of your comments. If you want to speak on any topic, give us a field report from out there in the world of what's going down, some of the human rights abuses that are not making the news, which, by the way, let me quickly say that there is a missing black woman. If you follow us on YouTube, I saw this on Twitter. And why it's on my mind, let me just go ahead and let y'all know what this woman's name is. Now, she appears to be biracial, and I'm assuming that she's biracial because a white woman saying that she's her friend, one of her best friends, tweeted this out. And then looking at the young lady's phenotype, but her name is Karina Mitchell. She is said to have a mental illness, and she went missing. I guess it was Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. She was supposed to be going something. That's the last that they had heard from her. And here it is, January 1st on the new year, and that family is not celebrating. I can guarantee you that. And the people on social media was able to track her to North Carolina, but this was back in May. And the reason I'm also bringing it up, besides the fact that this woman, Karina Mitchell, is missing, and we tweeted about it. So if you follow us on Twitter at Black Talk Radio, or if you subscribe and get notifications on our YouTube channel, Black Talk Radio, you'll see her picture and you'll see the conversation. But the social media with the work, the folks on social media tracked her to North Carolina, where she had been arrested for DUI in May. Now, what really stood out to me about that case was that she was booked in the jail on a $250,000 bond. Now, she originates from the New York City, New Jersey area. That's where she was last seen, if I remember all the information correctly. But she was supposed to be making her way to either Atlantic City or Atlanta. Now, Atlanta seems more plausible. She was coming through North Carolina. So, but she had to have gotten out of jail, even though that bond was $250,000, which is unheard of. But not surprising when we live in a system that's practicing slavery, and slavery is about squeezing profit out of human bodies by any means possible, any means necessary. And they have legalized that form of bond slavery. And she was a bond servant until somebody could pay 10% of that, which is $25,000 cash. So it might have worked in her favor to have a white parent to even get out of jail. But that's beside the fact that this woman is missing. And she's probably somewhere on the East Coast. And there's just not enough resources devoted to primarily women of color. I don't know if she classifies herself as a black person, because I'm all about self-determination and what have you, but that doesn't mean she's not down with the struggle of poor people worldwide. So this woman is missing. She deserves to be found. We have an underground of sexual trafficking, sexual slavery, which the authorities have deemed illegal, but they devote more resources to locking up people for smoking weed or selling weed in this terrible, unbalanced economy where the people at the top keep getting richer and the people at the bottom keep getting poor and finding less and less ways to make a living, let alone a so-called honest living. But the system devotes a lot of resources, far more resources, to putting people into prison slavery than it does into finding missing people like Karina Mitchell. If all those people, all those slave catchers out there was more focused on finding missing persons, solving actual crimes that harm someone, then I think that this nation, this country behind these enemy lines will be a lot safer. I'm not saying be totally safe, because there's always the state to threaten you. But in terms of the people's physical security, shouldn't be so many people missing with all these police officers. So you tell me, what are they? People say you should be respectful calling police officer, but their job is slave catching in a system that's practicing slavery. So that applies. That's the original term. So I'm just being original. I'm taking it back. I'm taking it back to the beginning. They change names all the time to throw you off the game. That's why Correction Corporation of America changed its name to CoreCivic. Same players, same practices. And that's slavery. So, hope that people will take a look at that, retweet that, share that video. Karina Mitchell been reported missing since at least Christmas Day, December the 25th, by friends. And she needs to be found. And it's just simply sad. So, again, we're doing three in a row. If you have any musical requests, we are spinning tracks, always three in a row. If you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call at 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025, or you can also dial us locally here in North Carolina at 704-802-5056. So I mentioned, as I opened up, you know, what's in the news. Now, again, we have subcultures within cultures. And it's really more proper to say within communities, within nations, there are subcultures within nations. And so there's this subculture, I think would be the accurate term to describe people who subscribe to this label of conscious community. And the conscious community is suffering a civil war. And for people that have been paying attention, this has been ongoing. It's been ongoing, but these are supposed to be two titans of the conscious community. You got filmmaker Tariq Nasheed, put out a series of films called Hidden Colors, also came into the game. He says it was about relationships. It could be described that way. Other people described it to me as pimping. I watched Dave Chappelle last night, and I give mixed reviews on those two Netflix films that came out. But I never heard of this pimp from the 20s called Iceberg Slim, who spent darn near 40 years pimping. And just how that is affected and influenced, because he was also a writer and some of his books were turned into films. But Dave Chappelle brought this guy up. And so I heard that Tariq Nasheed, I didn't watch the film, so I can't say. But his first few films was about pimping, about macking, I believe, about street culture, which this guy, Iceberg Slim, his book, Pimping, that's the name of the book, Pimping, is said to have popularized the culture, that street culture, you know. Today, like, okay, if we were to talk about a certain type of a culture, some people call it ratchet, you know, or something like that. And it's just promoting a lot of self-destructive behavior. You would say World Star Hip Hop has a subculture in black film or black video or social media, if you will. And that would be the more accurate description of World Star Hip Hop, because that's what it's doing, is sharing media. And so I was like, man. So then you have Mr. Umar Johnson, who's been a guest many times. I've never interviewed Tariq Nasheed, but who's been on Black Talk Radio many times. I was first introduced to him through an email with him or his people requesting to come on Black Talk Radio News to talk about this book about psychotropic drugs and the jugging of black boys. And being able to check that out, that theory out, is factual. The evidence, he does provide evidence that supports that. So that's the type of information we would want to bring to our audience. Now, that's as far as my extent to that knowledge. And he's a doctor, and I heard he was working in the school system, but me not working in that field, I didn't know you had to be licensed to practice. Well, I mean, that's common sense. I did know that, but I never assumed that he didn't have a license to practice. I thought if you were going to be in the school system, you have to be licensed. But if you do anything like you helping somebody and using your credentials as a psychologist from your training, then you're practicing if you do it outside of it. And so, you know, then there was the thing to build the school. I may have given $5, may have given $20. I don't remember. I gave when it first launched. I'm trying to build something here. So I don't have a lot of money to be sustaining other people's projects. But I contributed. I contributed, and I shared the fundraiser with other people. So I kind of feel responsible in a way for money being given by people, perhaps not necessarily influenced because they heard them on Black Talk Radio or on my show particularly, and or they saw me share it. So they gave. Hey, I know Scotty, I trust his information. You know, he ain't going to promote nothing that ain't on the up and up. And, you know, so I did. So now it is going on. I thought it was 2 years. It's going on 3 years. And I've seen no concrete, nothing. And I don't even want to get into the details of what should have already been accomplished, like me having a nonprofit education organization in the state of North Carolina, when that only took $200 to create, to get registered. A couple of more $100, you 501c3, education. Then that way, when people giving donations, it's tax deductible. I mean, that's just simple. Logical, well, I shouldn't say simple, but it's just a logical business practice. And nonprofits had to follow good business practices as well. So it didn't happen. It didn't happen. So a lot of people have been upset at that. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, just we use these words, leaders, and we don't even know what leadership qualities are. And that's because of a lot of emotionalism. And I'm not going to use a stereotype, because we hear people say, well, you know, black people are deeply spiritual. That mean emotional too. They deeply feel things and what have you. That's kind of like a stereotype. Because anything happens good or bad to a particular group of people, they're going to feel it deeply. They have their own spiritual practices and what have you. So that's kind of a stereotype. So what I'm saying is, regardless of these people being black, giving money, which is energy, to a project, and for it not to get show, what should I say, reasonable progress, they're going to get emotional. They're going to get feelings of anger. They're just natural emotions. Look, if somebody came to me to sell me some insurance, dressed up like an insurance man, and I gave them some money, then they was like, then we'll bill you the rest, gave them some cash, and then I never get it in the mail. That's just some kind of cash scheme, somebody going door to door, signing you up for some insurance. You didn't look it up on the internet, ask for no phone number to call. You know, you're going to be mad. You're going to be angry. You're going to be angry at yourself. How could I be so, you know, irresponsible and not checking things out? And so, you know, I'm in that boat too, if we talking about this school. So it's not like I'm judging anyone or calling anyone stupid. It happens. It's happened in history, throughout history. Again, I was watching this documentary, and I posted it in BTR community about Marcus Garvey. And there's one thing, you know, that Mr. Fuller said, Mr. Neely Fuller of the Counter-Racist Code book, that really stood out to me. And I don't know if he was the first person I heard say it, but it just struck me as true and logical, in that you don't study history to find out, oh, I was a great king and queen back in the 700 B.C. or A.D. when the Moors ruled Spain and all of that. That ain't what you study history for. You don't study history for pride. You should have pride just because you are. As philosophers have said, I am. You should take pride in I am. I exist. I'm me. You shouldn't have to look outside for external sources of pride. And I understand why that affects black people more so than others, it seems. But when you have to consider all the negative imagery, stereotypes, propaganda, teaching the black people that. Again, we, you know, black people in the United States is only about 3 to 4 generations out of the one of the most brutal forms of slavery to ever exist on this planet that we know of, that we can document. So people like that, they're going to have all kinds of emotional and the mental problems, and they're going to look for sources of pride when the media, the dominant media, is always portraying you negatively. And sadly, there are people who can take advantage of that. And as I was looking at Marcus Garvey and then some of the other figures they name, and just looking today, people tend to develop a following off of evoking emotions in people. Then they become like messianic figures in these people's minds, and they don't want to accept that these are fallible human beings. And if someone comes along and critiques the work, the project, or something someone said, a point of view or whatnot, then that person is seen as attacking that person, and they're worthy of death and destruction. And that's fanaticism. That's what you do. That's what people most associated with religions do. Right now, the people that's in the news, and it's not a stereotype because it's true, This has been throughout history. It's both Christians and Muslims. But you have people that kill. You insult the prophet or that person or this person. You are worthy of death. You insult this, and that's fanaticism. How does that work in a democracy? And I don't even want to use that word, but how does that work in a society where everybody's voice matters, where everybody respects everybody else's human rights? Isn't having an opinion a human right? And should we be so offended? Because that's what we are when we react in emotional ways. And so now we have these two guys going at each other because each other, both of them are offended about what the other has said about them. Then there are camps that are at war. And I shouldn't even use military terms because they ain't in no military and they ain't got no armies. They have followers. And it's okay to admire someone. It is okay to support the work of another person, but that's another person. That's another human being. You don't know all the flaws of that human being, and things will reveal themselves as they play out over time. And when they do, if they are fatal flaws, because everybody's flawed, but if they are fatal flaws, especially flaws in leadership like competence, number one, competence that you can carry out the undertaking that you have, said people that you plan to take, can you handle that? Do you have the leadership skills to appoint the people in the areas that you are weak in? Or in a case like Marcus Garvey, what I learned from a couple of these documentaries is he put people in charge of businesses that the UNIA membership was paying for, putting all this money, giving this money, and then some buying stock. But the people who are put in charge to run the day-to-day businesses that they created weren't businessmen and women, but were followers who were loyal. One person was appointed as an accountant who had never had any kind of statistician training, mathematical training whatsoever. He could add and subtract. But he had no experience in keeping books. But he was loyal, meaning he wouldn't question, he wouldn't make any suggestions based on observations, based off his own experience, that this or that is wrong. And that's why those businesses fail. See, I didn't know this. People had described some of the things that he had done. Oh, in Harlem, he employed thousands of people. Well, that's true. But for how long? How long did those businesses stay afloat? And did they only stay afloat as long as poor working people all over the nation kept contributing to the UNIA? Then this money poured into the businesses to cover up its losses because you don't have competent business managers over these businesses. But so again, that stood out to me. You don't study history, as Mr. Fuller said, to remember how great you were once. You want to know how you got into this current predicament and get some clues on what not to do so that once you get out, you don't fall back in. There are different kind of sayings out there that's saying basically the same thing. How does the quote go? Those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it. That's what it's saying. We know all our history ain't good. We know throughout history you're going to have some good times, you're going to have some bad times. That's life in your life. You have your good times and your bad times. We ain't studying our lives just to look back on the good times, or we not learning from our mistakes. And if we didn't learn from those mistakes, then we raising children who are equipped to repeat those mistakes. It's not advancing. So we got these people at war with each other. because each other got offended because somebody critiqued somebody. Now, I don't know. I watched a little bit of the Tariq Nasheed, and I mean, just it reminds you of when I was in junior high school and you doing it for fun, playing Dirty Dozen, seeing who could crack the funniest insult about somebody. It turned into that. Stuff that, you know, it shouldn't play out in the public, especially if I'm 40-something years old. I don't know how old Mr. Umar Johnson is. And to be quite honest with you, for about a year now, I've been questioning his mental health. But Tariq Nasheed is in his 40s. And I've had no reason to question his mental health, but I have questioned his maturity in the past, because he played with races on the internet too much. They have too much time. He could have other people on his staff logged in his account, taking digs at races and trying to get under their skin and what have you. But that, hey, that's not leading us anywhere. If that's you doing that, if you got an army you paying, you know, that are volunteers to agitate these people and run psychological operations against them, then that's cool. But if it's just you and you doing that, that's not a good investment of your time. And then it also displays a level of immaturity. And it's just not them. But we see it society-wide in the dominant society. Hillary Clinton, very immature. Donald Trump, very immature. The media promotes immaturity. Polls and who's more popular. Obama ain't in office. Who cares about if the world has a more favorable view of Barack Obama than they do Donald Trump? But millions of people are caught up into that. That's immaturity. I'm trying to prove my president was better than your president, and he wasn't. Ain't neither one of them. Nothing but a CEO of USA Inc. in the nation is still practicing slavery. Ain't neither one of them took not one step towards ending slavery. Obama took a little half step, but gave the private prison industry time to survive the market forces that was going to put it out of business. But that little policy directive to the Department of Justice, he could have issued an executive order, which would be still standing and would have forced a reversal by Donald Trump. By the time he got sworn in January the 20th, private prisons would have been out of business. Them dudes would have went broke. Hopefully jumping from towers off of Wall Street. So don't fall. That's symbolism. That's symbolism. So he can claim some kind of street cred. I tried to help. Y'all make the excuse, well, he had a Republican Congress to deal. No, he had that executive pen. Department of Justice, the Bureau of Prisons is totally, he could abolish the entire Bureau of Prisons if he wanted to. But in terms of private prisons, you see just announcing we not going to renew any more private prison contracts. So, I mean, it pains me to see people arguing with other people about who's better, Donald Trump or Barack Obama. Who spoke better? Who gave a better speech? Who needed a teleprompter and who didn't? Everything's a freaking show, man. And that's one of the things I got to get out of and how I run my programming. It's because this radio station, we play a radio station, is supposed to have a community feel to it. Plays music. It brings you news and information. It's not one guy giving you a lecture. But I understand the importance of talk programming, but I got to change mine up. I can't be on soapboxes too long, but the phone lines are open, 704 702-5056. Did I remember that correctly? Yes, I did. 704-802-5056, 866-510-9025. You're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, which is managed by the Black Talk Media Project. One of the things that I have to do more of is requesting funding for the vision of the Black Talk Media Project. The most we've ever had in a year was $6,000 for a budget, yet we've remained on air 9 years, reaching ears around the planet, sparking movements. And I dare say that Black New Abolitionist Radio, born here on the Black Talk Radio, did not launch this latest wave of abolitionism in this country. We've been able to do a lot with a little. But we could have been doing so much more if we had more contributions, tax-deductible contributions, to where we could put a physical presence out there. A radio station is really like the heartbeat of the community. That's what it should be. And community starts locally, not nationally. It starts locally. You start with one block, as people, you know, to use analogies, we talk about nation building. When you're building anything, you know, it comes in stages. It's levels to it. There's the building blocks. So you start a block at a time, and you start a dialogue, and you let the local leadership emerge. See, that's, again, my military analogy. You have many leaders, and you don't need no one central leader that it takes to galvanize 1 million, 2 million Black people to do this, that, or the other, or 5 million progressive people, regardless of their skin color, as long as they agree on the social political issues of the day and how to solve them, as in abolitionism, as one of those ways. Not the way. Don't want to simply boil it down to abolishing slavery, because there's much more going on besides slavery. But when you have a physical presence in a community where people can come down to the station and talk to the people, where people can actually come, stop by the station, see you at work every day, come in with their news stories, call you, tell you to send a crew out. That's communication is how you run a military out there. That's how you connect people. It's through communications. And we need to build these localized digital media, radio stations and platforms, so that the people themselves can talk to one another, determine among themselves who their leaders are. Because then when one person is assassinated, that, you know, that's the thing about having a national organization with one head. Then we, again, studying history to learn the mistakes. And it's a little bit more complex than what I'm about to say, but what happened to the Organization for African American Unity after Malcolm X got assassinated in New York City? What happened to that organization? John Henry Clark was still there, but he didn't have Malcolm's organizing skills. He was a historian. That was his expertise. He was a lecturer. He was an educator. Malcolm was a street organizer. He was that charismatic voice who had that personality, who can move people in his direction by invoking certain emotions. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword to that. And I do speak from experience, not just from my military experience, but once when I was participating in organized religion, in attending a church, and once giving a sermon that brought young women to tears. Now, I don't want to claim no special oratory skills back then to bring people to tears. I like to think it was more the message, which was inspired by the Spirit and taken from the Bible. But emotions can move people. So to me, that is a weakness. The army's not built like that. You don't have no big personalities and you know, character. People give speeches, but they ain't long speeches. It's all about the mission. What is your individualized as a unit individual mission? This is your area of expertise. You have leaders within that area that motivate the soldiers. This working in whether we're talking about communication battalion or we're talking about a combat battalion. The officer, let's say the lieutenant colonel gets killed. Let's say the colonel, a full bird, gets killed. Where is the lieutenant colonel to take his place? Until it's decided upon who's going to fill that position permanently. You got somebody to step in. Lieutenant colonel get killed, here come the majors, and so on and so forth. Most black organizations have not been structured that way because it's all been on one person. It's not what we're trying to do through Black Talk Media Project. Some people have even said to me, they look at me as a leader. Don't look at me as a leader. Look at me as a person who's leading in his field of expertise, which is communications. That's my technical skills. I have opinions and views like everyone else, but I'm here to facilitate dialogue. That's the mission of the Black Talk Media Project. And that dialogue would be more effective if it was on being held on a localized level. And that's our mission. I think NPR, National Public Radio, the government created National Public Radio System, which is also part of the public broadcasting system. That stuff was established by the U.S. government. And corporations funded, as well as you. So we're giving money. There's millions of people giving money to a government psyops that claims to be fair and balanced. Well, we don't need fair and balanced. We don't need balanced airways. And that's why I'm so glad we're not under any kind of federal regulations and outside of the IRS. But we have no obligation to be fair and balanced. I don't have to give equal time to no freaking KKK member, undercover racist, no police pig, slave catcher, union rep. I don't have to do that as an organization. I should say Black Talk Media Project doesn't have to do that. We don't need that. We need Justice Radio to steal the name of one of our client stations who's promoting justice. But we need this on a local level with local voices, with local leaders. And I hesitate to use that word because it's overused and we don't know what leadership is. So when we come back after this 3-in-a-row music break, I'll check the social media timeline to see if we got any requests. We're going to look at this article from the U.S. Army about leadership. Because we really don't. I've interviewed people over the 9 years I've been on doing this who had little leadership academies and whatnot in their local communities. So I don't want to say that nobody's doing it, but it's not standardized throughout our community. And that's something for those communities to provide. And that's why we need localized digital radio. That's why we need it. So, you know, these two going at each other like that, man, I don't want to hear anything about it, really, in terms of picking sides or anything like that, because it's immaturity. It shows a lack of leadership. It'd be one thing if I'm professionally critiquing you. It's another thing when I'm calling you out your name, making fun of your body, making fun of physical attributes, things of that nature, threatening. I heard Dr. Umar threaten Tariq Nasheed with violence. Now, that will get a person in their emotions. So I give Tariq that. But he continues on and on and on. It's days now. You still talking about it. Why are you letting that man get in your emotions like that? So we're dealing with some immaturity here. And it's just sad because, and I don't blame the people. Again, I don't know people's level of education. I don't know their cognitive abilities. Everybody don't think the same, don't have the same training, education, and people fall victim to stuff all the time. Again, the whole nation. I mean, that's everybody just about. Not everybody, but let's say 99% of the world. Especially here behind the enemy lines of USA. But when we come back, we're going to take a listen to, take a look at this article on leadership so that you will know the quality. So let's discuss that if nobody wants to comment on anything else. But I'm here for a couple of hours. We're hitting our second hour now. And if you want to give us a call, it's 704-802-5056 or 866-510-9025. That's a toll-free number. You can find international numbers through uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. Make sure that y'all contribute to the 9th annual fundraiser for the Black Talk Media Project. You'll find that information at blacktalkradionetwork.com, or you can contribute at blacktalkmediaproject.org. Be right back. You tuned in to Black Talk Radio. Turn down this volume some here. You tuned in to Black Talk Radio Network. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast from behind enemy lines. You can find us online at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Just finished up 3 in a row. One of my all-time favorites, Can't Trust It by Public Enemy. Then you had Mos Def, Mathematics, laying out the problem, man. We know the problem. Everybody know the problems. We may disagree or differ in what we're calling them, and some of us may just be scratching the surface and haven't identified the disease yet. Now, I say that disease is slavery, but it's a whole bunch of other problems. Slavery creates poverty. Slavery creates suffering. Everything you can imagine, man. So, and it comes in different forms, but I'm primarily focused on the one through the prison slavery. Heard some bad news out of North Carolina before we get to this article. Let me share some quick news with you. I'm going to talk about this article about leadership from the perspective of the United States military, the most dominant organization on the face of the planet. Okay, so what can we learn from them? Well, we're going to try to learn some leadership skills, because somebody said to me the other day, they asked the question about black leaders. And if it was a problem or an agenda with so many biracial, quote unquote, leaders being seen on TV more and more. I guess they're talking about like on these TV news talk programs on MSNBC or CNN. You know, they bring in some activists. They'll have these title activists, or they work for that organization or this nonprofit. And I don't know that it's correct to call them leaders. They're leading organizations. Obviously, if they're the heads of those organizations, some of them are not. and they come on and they give a perspective and opinion. It may be correct, it may be incorrect, but that don't make them leaders. So why do people look at showcase people on television as leaders or apply that label to them, or just because of their skin color say they're being portrayed as black leaders? I take the position that there is no black leadership. If there is some black leadership, it is very ineffectual because it has not accomplished much in the last 40 years in terms of improving the lives of black people and oppressed people, period, behind these enemy lines, regardless of their skin color. You know, black people have always led the resistance to injustice, being one of the larger, quote unquote, minority so-called groups in this country. Now we're hearing rumblings and I'm seeing white racist conservatives trying to exploit some kind of, or create some kind of rift or beef between Hispanics, quote unquote. We're talking about the non-white ones and black people, because those quote unquote Hispanics, non-whites, supposed to become a majority population in whatever, however many decades they project that to be. So let's start some beef with them, or, and what have you. I think it was Representative Steve King out of Iowa is where I believe he is from. So, but before I get into this article about leadership, some international news, and what bothers me about this story, it says Israel indicts Palestinian teenage girl who punched soldier. They indicted a 16-year-old Palestinian girl on Monday on charges including assault for punching an Israeli soldier in the face 2 weeks ago, an incident which made her into a hero for Palestinians and was seen as humiliating by right-wing Israelis. Israel has held, I don't need to get into that. I want to see the charges. What are the charges? Now, you just can't slap people and not expect to have charges. But then when you consider the brutal occupation of a people, and some have described their living condition as open-air jails, people are going to have emotional outbursts. It doesn't say what the charges are specifically. So therefore, we don't know what the repercussions are going to be. This is a terrible article, Reuters. This is a terrible article. What are they charging the girl with? What's the time in slavery is she facing? Now, what's troubling to me about this is one of the arresting Israelis is a black woman. That if I saw this black woman in Mount Holly, North Carolina, or Gastonia, North Carolina, at the mall or at anywhere, I would think she was she's another black person, but I wouldn't know her nationality, which is Israeli. And this is just another example of what proxy racism looks like, where we have black people participating in a system that oppresses people based along religious lines, color lines, ethnicity, gender. And especially as a black person, it's just troubling. It's the correct word I should use, troubling, to see a situation involving white supremacy and then to know, based off of the reports of the rebellions that black Jews had in the streets of Israel, this is troubling when you see one of these soldiers is black, is a black person. So again, it's all skin folk ain't kin folk. And we cannot have emotional attachments to individuals or a skin color. We can't be blinded by that. War does not work that way. You cannot wage war that way, given enemy soldiers passes based on skin color. You can't do it. Is that logical, may I ask? I don't even think you have to have any kind of military training. And what do I mean by giving people passes? Meaning that they're free of criticism, that they're free of examination, and that they bear no responsibility for their personal actions. No. When it comes to slave catchers here in the United States, I don't see color. So that's the story. It's been shared in btrcommunity.com. Let me check the Twitter timeline, some of the stories we shared there today. Here in North Carolina, racial gerrymandering. We got a reporter saying North Carolina is no longer classified as a democracy. North Carolina does so poorly on measures of legal framework and voter registration that on those indicators, we rank it alongside Iran and Venezuela. Now, Venezuela, see, I know this is a partisan person. Venezuela has some of the most, I shouldn't even say partisan, but part of the COINTEL operation, perhaps. Venezuela has been described as the most secure and accurate in terms of voting system in the world. Because they got electronic voting machines and they take your thumbprint and a thumb scanner so you don't have to have no photo ID or nothing. All you got to do is just go have your finger thumbprint scan. You don't have to have a card or nothing because the machine reads your thumbprint. That makes it so much easier, don't it? They've never been accused by any of these world bodies that monitor elections of any kind of election shenanigans like you saw during the Democratic primary here in the United States. Vote, people registration being changed. All kind of crazy mess. So, but let's bring it back to North Carolina. And this is why I say people say voting doesn't matter. Racial gerrymandering in North Carolina matters. If it didn't matter, if you're voting here in North Carolina or anywhere else for that matter, but here in North Carolina did not matter, why would they gerrymander a district? Why would they spend time, effort, hire a staff to draw districts of where people can vote and the number of elected representatives to come out of that district? Why would they put so much time, effort, and money in a gerrymandering if voting didn't matter? Because if voting didn't matter, they wouldn't give a damn how many people came out to vote. Would they be like in helping everybody vote? They would loosen the requirements for voting. Hey, it don't matter. Hey, you from Mexico, you wasn't born. Hey, come on and vote. It don't matter. You know, hey, you from Canada, come on down. You don't want to see Donald Trump become president. You can vote in our election. Come on. If it didn't matter. See, I think people are mistaken corruption in election rigging as voting not matter. And it's easier to say it don't matter and not participate than do the hard work of rooting out that corruption. You paying for it. It's yours. It's right there in your local community. There's a voting district. There's a local board that handles that. These are flesh and blood people. These ain't no paper mache imaginary beings somewhere with magical powers controlling things like puppet masters. These people come from your community. If you don't get involved, if you don't become the person that sits on the board, if you don't control, then, you know, you get what we got, and that's injustice, still practicing slavery. So voting does matter. And again, my pledge is to call every district, not every district, let me restate that, to call every person running for office on a state, as a state senator, representative, as a federal representative, senator, congressperson, it doesn't matter, and push an abolitionist platform on them and make it a campaign issue and encourage others in my district to do the same. But don't let nobody tell you voting doesn't matter, because the evidence, the time, money, and energy spent in preventing people from voting and discouraging people from voting would not be happening, because it wouldn't matter. Hillary Clinton's $84 million money laundering scheme. Speaking of rigging elections, she is connected like mobsters, and it is unlikely she'll be held to the same standards as less influential people. Donald Trump ain't going to push for them to be in jail, because he said after he was elected, I don't want to see them in jail. They're good people. He said that. It's on Memorex, as they used to say in the back in the day. It's on Memorex. But there's a story. You can find it at btrcommunity.com. I'm going to open it up and I'll tell you where it came from here in just a bit. Let me get out my email or my message. The anatomy of Hillary Clinton's $84 million money laundering scheme. The committee to defend the president, and it doesn't matter to me that these are Trump supporters. What matters to me is there any validity? Is there any evidence supporting their FEC, that's the Federal Election Commission, complaint against Hillary Clinton's campaign, the Democratic National Committee, Democratic state parties, and Democratic mega donors? Is there any evidence? I'm going to say yes, because it's been put out there in the public by key members of the Democratic Party. Donna Brazil is telling you in interviews on the media. It's in her book about this financial arrangement that they had in place with the Hillary Clinton campaign before the primaries even started. They done signed some paperwork on how the money was going to be directed, whether it came through the states. Let me just give you some more details on this. This organization is going after Hillary, the Democrats, we should say, the Hillary Clintonites, says, we documented the Democratic establishment using state chapters as straw men to circumvent campaign donation limits and launder the money back to Clinton's campaign. The 101-page complaint focused on the Hillary Victory Fund, the $500 million joint fundraising committee between the Clinton campaign, DNC, and dozens of state parties, which did exactly what the Supreme Court declared would be illegal. So they're talking about prior precedents. Hillary Victory Fund solicited six-figure donations from major donors, including Calvin Klein and Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane, and routed them through state parties en route to the Clinton campaign. Roughly $84 million may have been laundered in what may be the single largest campaign finance scandal in U.S. history. So they, in the rest of the article they give, and I sometimes poke at this guy on social media when he put out some garbage, but conservative filmmaker, a melanated hater of black people and justice, Dinesh D'Souza, who was born in Bombay, India, who's a naturalized U.S. citizen, came over here as a kid, thinking college, he come from money, he's part of that caste system, and let me tell you, his family wasn't in the untouchable caste, and he come over here, and he's a conservative. So he wanted to give more than whatever, you know, few, I'll just throw out, let's say the limit was $7,500 per candidate. That's the campaign limit. So to try to affect local politics in New York, he gave money, tens of thousands of dollars, might have been over $100,000, to different people and told those people who to give the money to. That's a straw man. They were able to prove that. He was sentenced to some kind of in-house jail, which really wasn't jail. We know he wasn't in jail. Some kind of program. I can't remember the details. But he was in custody. And then the rest of it on something like 5-year probation. He was convicted of that. They did the same thing. It's what's being alleged here, but on a more complex scale, involving vast more amount of money. Next story, let's see. We got Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador of the U.N., saying our hopes and prayers are with the millions of people suffering from repressive governments in North Korea, Venezuela, Cuba, and especially in Iran, where the Iranian people are finding their voice. All right, so not to diminish any complaints about violations of their human rights in Iran, because I don't live in Iran. Not a lot of documentation of these, you know, information coming out of Iran that I'm aware of. So I'm going to say this, though. To Nikki Haley, I would say none of those countries that you have named have citizens being brutally shot down on the streets on a daily basis like American citizens are. And I don't care about their skin color because I'm an abolitionist. And we're talking over 1,000 every year. Matter of fact, let me pull up killed by police. A database that I trust, police.net. We've actually interviewed one of the people that's working on that who wants to remain nameless. Look, they didn't got three already, and it's we ain't even got out of the first day of the year, and it's already three casualties already. So let me find 2017. What's the final tally for 2017? 1,188 killed by police. Now, I'm not one of those people that are dishonest and disingenuous. I'm going to tell you that all 1,188 were all unjustifiable homicides. Because we got people out there who commit crimes and who are a danger to society. And who we just had a bunch of cops killed in Denver. Well, not killed, but one killed and six injured by a U.S. military veteran who had issues with how much liberty and freedom we don't have in the United States. So I'm not saying that every person that gets killed, it was unjustifiable. It was like a Eric Garner or a Michael Brown. It was like, you know, I'm not saying that. But I'm willing to bet you, even if we say 25% of those was justifiable, that's still over 700 that was unjustifiable, the vast majority of them. Just had a guy killed for answering the door when one of these sick people doing something what's called squatting, where they send a squat team to your house talking about you just murdered somebody and you're holding hostages, and the police come out and run out and they knock on the door and dude comes to the door and he gets shot within seconds. Now, they didn't have an intent to go there and murder that man, but by recklessness and I would say a lack of respect for the value of life, this man was killed within seconds. So like Tamir Rice was gunned down within seconds of contact. So, but Nikki Haley ain't got no fingers to point at no country. And then you have people who co-sign on to this type of stuff. Oh, the United States so much better. No, it's not. Does Iran, I bet you, if you look up, here's a $100 bet to anybody who can prove me wrong. Look up North Korea, the number of incarcerated, and we're talking prisons and jails, in North Korea, Venezuela, Cuba, and Iran, and I bet you their combined total isn't more than the United States of America Incorporated, who depends on a propaganda machine which includes football games with military flyovers and pulling out a flag, participating in a nationalistic and coercing participation in a ritual, a nationalistic ritual forced patriotism, and then got the nerve to be talking about how much freedom somebody got in another country. It's crazy. Talked about Palestine. Facebook has been on a censorship rampage against Palestinian activists who have protested decades-long illegal occupation. That's coming to you from Anti-Media on theantimedia.org. Facebook has long been engaged in this. I've reported stories over the years of them have the Israeli army having a troll of people on social media to post pro-Israeli, anti-Palestinian propaganda. See, we ain't running operations like that on social media. I'm not coming down and saying, hey, you shouldn't contact your family and share, you know, pleasant pictures and conversations and useful videos and whatever. It's a tool. But we don't have a dedicated group of people that's pushing propaganda favorable to their positions, issues, and human rights in this country. So what I'm saying is we don't have everything we need for those who say we got everything we need. We don't. We need to develop it. So those are a couple of headlines. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into this article. Let me check the phone lines. If you have a question or comment, I keep forgetting to mention Star. Star, y'all had to forgive me. I've been off air for a few days. Not just a couple of days, a few days. Actually getting over a cold myself. But the telephone number is 704-802-5056. And 866-510-9025, hit star, star. Let's look at some leadership school, leadership traits. What does the Army look for? What do they say? What does Lieutenant General Robert S. Farrell say about what makes a good leader? I don't think anybody can dispute the effectiveness of the U.S. military and being a dominant organization. It ain't all about bombs and bullets either. It's about communication systems, and it's about feeding people. It's about everything that you need to sustain yourself. Engineering. You need technical people to run these things. So you need people to lead. Not based on a personality, although personality traits do matter, but not based on how charismatic they are. If they can, quote unquote, move the crowd, get people emotional and clapping and all of that kind of stuff that we see in the church, we see in the conscious community, we see throughout, you know, this history. Marcus Garvey relied on it, being able to move the crowd. He actually learned his style of speaking from a white preacher man in New York, in Harlem, the first white preacher, the man credited with starting these big tent revivals where thousands of people would come. Army don't pick people based like that. You do have to be able to motivate people, and speech is part of it. But you got to have a whole lot of other qualities. So let's just go over this article. What makes a good leader, by Lieutenant General Robert S. Farrell? There are a few topics that are simultaneously as ancient and as modern as the topic of leadership. In our Army, the elements of effective leadership are infused in much of our training, doctrine, tactics, techniques, procedures, and even daily conversations. What they're talking about there is how you address when you're on duty, and even if you're off duty, you still address an officer a certain way. Even if you're in a social setting like the club. But let me continue. That's what they mean by daily conversation. But again, how you talk to people. Despite the extraordinary attention the Army and many other institutions in our society pays to the subject of leadership, the answer to the question, what makes a good leader, is neither simple nor universal. Nonetheless, certain foundational leadership traits have proven themselves over time. See, these are tried and true. This is how long they've been on their game. They've been on their game a lot longer than any of us been alive. They've been developing this, handing it down, refining it generation to generation. There's an old saying, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Nonetheless, certain foundational leadership traits have proven themselves over time, particularly for those who have accepted the unique responsibility to lead soldiers and Army civilians. We should take every opportunity to remind ourselves of these traits because they emerge from our commitment to a common set of Army values. This is what I was saying earlier about people. Everybody don't share the same principles, the same values. When people tell me, oh, we all come from or we all practice African culture or African traditions or African values. Look, they don't even do that in Africa. You have over 177 ethnic groups. Guess what European militaries exploited and how they came to dominate Africa? Those differences and the fact that these people were already at war with each other because they don't view it. Back then, it was no viewing people, at least themselves, as, hey, he's black, he got the same skin color as me, the same nappy hair as me, eyes shaped. You know, eye color, dominant eye color. We all look the same. No, we speak a different tongue. We got different cultural practices. I raise cattle. You a hunter. All kind of differences. You worship that deity. I worship this deity. Everybody wasn't practicing Ma'at. That was Egypt. So, you know, when you try to base some leadership based off of some values like that, I'm like, you ain't telling me nothing. That's African values. Which specific values you talking about? Now, if you say that's a specific set of values that's religion, also religious based, but also common sense based and just how to interact with people in a society, certain laws and principles, a code of behavior. But again, everybody ain't the same. Everybody don't agree on the code of behavior. It's impossible. I'm not going to say it's impossible. But if you bring those different beliefs and values into the U.S. military, you're going to check them at the door. The 39th Chief of Staff of the Army, General Mark A. Miley, aptly stated that the traits we seek in today's Army leaders include agility. And what are they talking about agility? That's physical right there. But a lot of people talk bad about kids playing sports and stuff like that. Warfare is physical. That helps people keep in shape. Some people just not going to go out there and lift weights and run by themselves, but they will run up and down a court for hours at a time or up and down a field competing with other individuals, which also teaches teamwork. That's what they mean by agility. That could be physical. That could also be mental agility. When they start talking about adaptability, that's mental agility. But being able to adapt to sit in certain situations and personnel, flexibility. That means that I'm flexible. I don't have all the answers. I may not have the smartest answer in the room, but I'm not going to let my ego get in the way and where this private over here who came into the military already working in this sector in the civilian world far more longer than the Army been training me. But because of the way it's structured, he came in after me, so I outrank him. I'm supposed to be flexible enough to assign leadership responsibility to that private. Because it's all about the success of the mission, having the most competent people. Egos don't let you do that. Some people think that they master masters of all trades. And they not. Mental and physical resilience, that means being able to take stress, being strong physically. Again, that's where exercise is important. We play organized. I play football and basketball in the military. Mental and physical resilience, stress. You may not see your family for months at a time, a year at a time. You might have to take crap off of people and you can't say nothing. You know you got buttholes in the military, bullies and whatnot. They rape a lot of people in there. You got to have mental toughness to deal with that kind of mess. Competence. That should be self-explanatory. That, again, goes to being competent in my abilities or to accomplish the task to which I am assigned. If I ain't never built a web platform before, I'm not competent in building one. And I just can't tell people I'm an expert in building this or I got any kind of skills in this. And I just been watching YouTube videos and have no years of actual doing it, practicing, training, doing something repetitively. I can't be a competent bookkeeper if I'm bad at math. You know, they give you an ASVAB test. It's like a IQ test, but it's not scored the same as an IQ. You need 110 to be able to get any job you want to. I had friends in my unit that I hung out with. Pierre Casey, just recently hooked back up with him on social media. He scored a 140, man. That's like genius level. Very competent in his job. He worked in avionics, working on electronic equipment for aircraft. So, you know, and then it says, most importantly, character. What is that? Should that be self-explanatory? That mean as an officer, I can't be, when these little young private women, no matter how fine they might look, I got to have a moral character to be like not trying to get in their pants and using my position. Or some of these women, and I should say people, period, because it's not like, you know, it's just a woman. If a man is gay, and I imagine gays do the same thing to get ahead. Let's look at both sides of it, as David Chappelle kind of hinted at, that, you know, it's terrible that all this sexual assault and rape is going on in the military. But it's also kind of messed up how that's kind of like an unspoken thing that's going on, where you have people who are aggressive and who will throw themselves at a person in position of power because they see how they can gain and advance through the ranks. This one girl was being sexually abused and she was married. Had just got married, came in an E-1 private. Man, this girl, I had been in 3 years, this girl working in the MOS that don't advance you that quickly had then got to become an E4P, which means promotable to sergeant. Same as me. I didn't been in 3 years. She ain't been in a year at the most. Come to find out, her staff sergeant in charge of the supply was playing in her pants. She eventually told it on him. Well, I don't know exactly know how it got found out, but he got busted. I don't know if another soldier caught him, but that's how she advanced so quickly. You got to have a leader supposed to have moral character to not prey on women or men or anybody sexually, nor accept the advances of those under your command. That's character. You got to have that character. But there's a lot of people in the military that are of low character. And that's because it's because don't nobody really want to join them. Because ain't nobody attacking America. America doing the attacking. And it's basically a poverty drab where poor people are going in. Not as educated people. And they lower the standards to where, you know, even people with criminal records. Again, I don't hold people criminal records, especially if it's a nonviolent, victimless crime. But I'm talking about violent criminals being allowed in. And it's just, man. But let's stay on topic, though. They still the most efficient organization on the face of the planet. Filled with people who look like you and me. Character is often demonstrated in how closely, continuing with the article, character is often demonstrated in how closely our actions, decisions, and relationships adhere to Army ethics and values. Competence is developed over time through rigorous practice, professional learning, rigorous practice, over and over and over, drills, and a commitment to excelling in every aspect of our duties. It is vital that Army leaders have both character and competence. Everybody don't have character. Everybody ain't competent. But they may be very charismatic, able to move the crowd. Timeless tips in leadership. As important as formal training is to developing good leaders, effective leadership is something that has to be practiced in our day-to-day actions. As a result, good leadership is not only about learning overarching leadership principles, it is about doing the right things, large and small, dozens of times each day for your soldiers, Army, civilians, and command. In this way, good leadership becomes a habit that is hard to break. So what are the right things that good leaders, and we get into the meat of it now. So what are the right things that good leaders turn into daily habits? They include the following timeless practices. Remember, this is time tested. They've been refining this code, this leadership training program for over 100 years, 200 years, however old the U.S. military is. This is begun by Lieutenant General Robert S. Farrell. These are the things that good leaders turn into daily habits, according to him. Always treating people with dignity and respect. Regardless if I practice Christianity or whether I follow Louis Farrakhan in the Nation of Islam, whether I vehemently disagree with you because of something you celebrate and I don't, I'm still supposed to treat you with dignity and respect. That includes if I don't approve of who you are romancing and I don't agree with that lifestyle, if it ain't breaking the law, then I'm supposed to treat, again, man, it comes down to treating people how you want to be treated. Earning and building the trust of your soldiers, civilian peers, family, leaders, and the public. How do you build trust? By doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. And not keep every time there's an update due. Give me a progress update. Well, this and that happened, and it prevented us from completing this task, sir. And, you know, just every month it's an excuse of why I didn't get the job done. You don't build trust. You don't instill trust in other people, and they're not going to trust you. Setting the highest standards and holding yourself and everyone in your organization accountable for maintaining them. This is something I have to even do with myself and need to do more and more. Holding myself to the highest standards. I can even apply that to radio broadcasting. Being more professional. Sticking to the scientific format of what works. Not running my radio show like I'm running a bootleg conference line. Is that how they do that in professional radio? See, it apply to any area. Different areas have different standards. Communicating horizontally and vertically, openly, transparently, and continually, constantly giving your people updates, constantly being transparent, being open and honest. Whether we're talking about with the people above me or below me or the people that is in the military context, my equal, meaning the same rank. We on the same team. Mentoring, evaluating, and recognizing your team members honestly and fairly. No, we're not promoting Johnny called Johnny White, and I'm white. Johnny don't have all the leadership qualities nor the skills that will make him the best candidate for this position that has opened up or this promotion. Reading and reflecting on the Army's profession, your branch, your organization, and your mission. See, each battalion, they have like their own little mascots. And you have a specific mission. When I was in the 86th Signal Battalion, Thunderbirds, what was our mission? Our mission was communicating, making sure all the troops in the field had a reliable communication system, whether we're talking about tactical field telephones with a switchboard and all that stuff, or we talking about microwave communications, beaming stuff to satellites and bouncing it back down. That was your mission. If my mission is to feed 800 troops three times a day, I got to be competent. I got to know what my main mission is so I can be focusing on accomplishing that task. Maintaining balance by devoting time to your family and community. Having fun by embracing your responsibilities with enthusiasm and optimism. In other words, don't come to work with a stank-ass attitude because it's infectious. Good leadership is often built by practicing each of these actions until they turn into habits your soldiers and civilians will come to expect. I have to be honest, just speaking generally, that we don't expect, nor do we demand the highest standards from people we call them leaders. We just don't. And we're following stuff because it sound good. And it's stuff that's been said before. Ain't nothing new under the sun. But then we ignore the shortcomings. Nobody's perfect. But the fatal shortcomings. But let's stop using the word leadership and it don't apply. John Lewis ain't my leader. John Lewis don't speak for me. He's a leader recognized by this system by way of an elected voice, but that's the United States of America Incorporated system. Yes, we want to infiltrate that and have, because you can't leave it to them all. That's the rule of law right there. That's how laws get passed. That's how money get passed out. And that's how, you know, so, but if we're going to talk about some black leadership, our community leadership, John Lewis don't speak for me. Can't no man speak for me that votes for bills that gives millions of dollars of military tactical equipment to slave catchers and then want to act like you the greatest civil rights leader left alive. You went from getting beat in the head with batons by police to putting batons in police hands. It's not consistency. That's not leadership. Now, this is a very long article, and I'm not here to read it all for you, but you can find it. Let me make sure that I post it in btrcommunity.com and try to share it out to the other social networks. But we have our own social network. We're not abandoning. We can't abandon these other operations that the enemy operates, because I told you how the Israelis do, right? And they're not the only ones. So let me put that in there. BTRcommunity.com, what makes a good leader? And that is by, let me scroll to the top, Lieutenant General Robert S. Farrell. It was written January the 4th, 2016. And the source is army.mil. That's army.mil for military. Army.mil. I'm saying we are calling people leaders and we don't know what it takes to be a leader because we ain't never been trained on it. Being in front of a whole bunch of people don't make one a leader. And I'm speaking strictly by military standards. And I'm only telling you what the people who dominate the planet is teaching their soldiers. Now, I don't see what's the problem with requiring those type of traits in a person and get results, because you had to build a track record. Some people get ahead by sleeping with the commanders or brown nosing, as we call it, and all of that kind of kissing butt and all that kind of stuff. But they don't play that really in the officer corps. Over time, you faking the funk. Then we know, the soldiers know, and we ain't gonna respect you. We may do what you say, but if we ever get in real battlefield conditions, dude, we going to have to question some of them orders you giving. Because you finna get somebody killed. But anyway, let me continue on with the program. We've hit our last hour. Again, if you have any questions, any comments, any observations you would like to share, any news to share, give us a call at 866-510-9025. After we come back from this next three in a row, that's 866-510-9025 or 704-802-5056. Hit star to put yourself in the caller's queue. Also got that chat room at uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back on the other side. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast from behind these enemy lines on this January the 1st, 2018, a new year as we head into our 10th year of broadcasting for the Black Talk Radio Network and pushing towards the vision and mission of the Black Talk Media Project. And again, establishing digital radio stations in our communities, not just based online, but we need buildings. We need physical buildings, and they're not going to cost $1 million to build. Sometimes it's better to lease space than it is to try to build a building. So however that manifests, that's our goal throughout this nation called USA Inc. And only you can make that vision become a reality by making a tax-deductible contribution to the U.S.-based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. You'll see donation buttons either on the network, the radio network, or on our nonprofit's home where you can find services. We got BTR Community, $24 for a lifetime membership. Even though you're signing up for a yearly subscription, if you cancel it, you're not going to be kicked out. Because we understand the economic challenges facing not just black people, but a lot of people in the United States. And it's going to get worse for a lot of them. I was listening to this one dude, YouTube channel. He used to work with Yvette Carnell. I don't think they're together anymore in terms of a working relationship. Irami Frapong or something like, he's from Athens, Georgia. That's where he's based at. And he's trying to do his own little media thing down there in Georgia. He called his program the Black Athenians. So that's always been the vision of Black Talk Media Project. And I think as an organization, we found a better way to move forward in establishing that by establishing local nonprofits. There may be existing nonprofits and you want to incorporate into your mission running a local community station. Become part of the Black Talk Media Project Collective, become a member station. We'll talk about that more, but we definitely need the donations of the people, the funding of the people, because I'm not going to apply for grants from George Soros. I shouldn't expect people like him or the U.S. government or the state government or billionaires like Ray Kroc of McDonald's. He's dead now. He left NPR. I think about $150 million. I shouldn't expect people like that to support the type of media project that we're engaged in. I shouldn't even seek after it. If a person like that wants to donate, they can make a donation a regular way that a person makes donations. That's just giving $200. Because there'll be no strings attached. We're totally committed to the mission of creating a revolutionary truly grassroots-based, progressive radio network throughout this country. So become a part of that vision, where these radio stations would not only operate as a radio station, but as a community development center. And also educating people on media, how to create it, how to produce it, the technology that's involved. So anyway, about to wrap up the program. Tomorrow night I'll be on air at 8:00 p.m. Eastern Time with BTR News. And we're expected to have a guest from the committee. Let me pull up the information. From the committee to free Mamiya, to bring Mamiya home, with the Center for Place, Culture, and Politics. They're having a dialogue on white supremacy with Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz and Ramona Africa. This will be going down in New York City, I believe. No, location. Yeah, New York City, January the 9th. That's coming up at 6:00 p.m. We'll have more details for you by tomorrow. Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz is a celebrated author of Loaded, A Disarming History of the Second Amendment. I looked up her book, and I've heard this among liberals and other people who consider themselves progressives or whatnot, and they want to expose the true historical origins of the Second Amendment. And we know its connections to slavery. All of that's true. It's well documented. Slave catchers. That's where the police come from. That's what the Second Amendment is talking about, militias. It's talking about slave patrols. More so to protect more against slave rebellions than any kind of reinvasion by the British or something like that. We know that connection. But at the same time, and I would have to read her book, but if anyone takes the position that we should disarm the people, I am vehemently opposed to that position. And that's not even something that is we done through a black revolutionary action in the history of this country. Have to have the means to defend yourself. And I mean, what good would the U.S. military be if nobody had any weapons? You can't defend your country, and, you know, you can't launch offensive either. Just not. And then we have Ramona Africa, the Move family, and we know they practice armed self-defense. Black Panther Party, armed self-defense. Before them, you had Robert F. Williams and the Black Guard here in North Carolina practice self-defense. The Deacons of Defense, teamed up with Martin Luther King Jr. in his last march, March Against Fear, to provide point cover, military term, clear the way, so to speak, make sure wasn't no racists hiding in the bushes, ready to shoot Dr. King. He should have had them doing his security when he was in, staying at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis. He didn't have no security. He didn't have professional military trained security. So, you know, I just can't roll with the, I'm against the Second Amendment and I'm going to work to pass some kind of law or take some kind of legislative action that we take guns out of the hand of the people. That's suicide. All right. But Ramona Africa, again, Move family, they practice it. She'll be there. They'll have I don't know if there'll be like a debate or if each one of them be giving a presentation, but we'll find out more about it tomorrow night. Don't want to say our guests. We want to get two on, but we only got one confirmation, so we'll hold off on announcing that. But I'll be on at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time tomorrow. Just wanted to bring that event. Again, that's on January the 9th. It's going down inside the Activist Studio. Sponsored by the campaign to bring Mumia home. Of course, talking about revolutionary political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal, in conjunction with the Center for Place, Culture, and Politics. The event is named A Dialogue on White Supremacy. Again, Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz and Ramona Africa are your speakers at the Recital Hall, first floor at the Graduate Center, which is located at 365 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York. That's Tuesday, January the 9th, 2018, at 6 o'clock p.m. Mark it down your calendar. Our comrades, listeners in the New York City area. All right, I don't see any pressing news that I need to share with you. There's always something going on, and, you know, we should always be aware. But join us at BTRCommunity.com, where the membership is pretty good about sharing information and not a whole bunch of nonsense. But again, I don't sweat people for not being serious all the time, because as we learn from the rules of and recommendations of leadership, it talked about, man, you know, you got a car, how they say that word, compartmentalize things, man. You got to have some downtown in the Army. They call that R&R. You can't be going hard 24/7 a day. You can't do it, man. Your body can't handle it. Your mind can't handle it. So we can't be serious all the time, because even U.S. military troops get some time off from duty. All right, so I'll be back on air tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is Tuesday. I don't know if Tando Radio Show will be back or not by tomorrow, but we'll let you know. Definitely, Dave posts that information to BTRCommunity.com. So we're going to close it out with some Public Enemy, Fight the Power. Peace and blessings to all. Y'all be safe out there. Recognize there's a war going on. It's a global war. Slavery has never been abolished. And they use racism, classism, colorism. They use all kind of isms to keep the majority of the people that's suffering under the system fighting each other instead of fighting those that's in control. All right, peace and blessings to all. Y'all be safe.